Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. We're going to be continuing on with our Star Trek Discovery coverage. We're up to the episode Lethe, the episode 6 of season 1. Written by Joe Manosky and Ted Sullivan, directed by Douglas Arniakowski. Is that right? That's something like that. Aired October 22nd, 2017. In this episode, the USS Discovery crew is intrigued by a new addition, Lieutenant Ash Tyler. Sarek seeks Burnham's help, rekindling memories from her past, and Admiral Cornwell questions Lorca's tactics. As always, for Discovery, we're joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
I think I hate this show.
Oh, we're at that point in the discussion, huh?
I don't know. We can talk about it. It was fine.
It was fine. It was yeah. I guess we'll sort of get into it and everything like that. But I guess we should start off by saying that last week we missed out on we never even really discussed really the fact that Ash Tyler might be a spy for the Klingons, which is kind of unique. It's maybe it's a byproduct of recording these right after we watch them on Sunday nights, and we don't have time to really think about what we just saw. But yeah. Do you have anything you want to address about the fact that Ash Tyler potentially could be a spy? There's a whole sort of internet rumor about whether or not he is Vok in sort of being augmented to look like a human and stuff like that.
I'm inclined to believe it. If only because of the weird fact that if you look up the actor who plays Vok, he seems to not exist.
Right. Yeah. It's a fake name.
And, B, that it's so ridiculous that I wouldn't put it past the show doing it at all. If that's the case, whatever explanation they give me for how they turned Vok into a human looking Starfleet guy, I'm going to go, yeah, oh, sure. Whatever. Like there's nothing they can do to explain that. That's going to be like, oh, that was genius.
Right. Well, it's weird because Enterprise has happened, and Enterprise happened before the show, and in that show they deal with the smooth-headed Klingons in that one. They get this like augment virus, and it causes them to, I think it's like a super soldier type serum, and it turns them into the smooth-headed ones, and that explains why there are the two appearances in TOS and TNG and stuff, or it's supposed to anyway. So I don't know if they're going to tie into that here, but I guess that'll be something that we have to keep our eyes open for. They don't really touch on it in this episode. I brought it up mostly because the episode is called Lethe. That's the title of it. And Lethe is one of the rivers in Hades where if you drink from it, it gives you amnesia or you forget everything. And I thought that what I thought they were going to do was in this episode they would reveal that Vok is Ash and that they've wiped his mind to create a super spy, basically. Like, he's no longer Vok. He is sort of a human at this point. And I thought Lethe was going to be the reference point to that, where he gave up everything. As that Klingon says, you have to give up everything if you want to succeed.
Right.
And give up not only just his physical appearance, but his sort of mental state as well. He would no longer be a Klingon. We don't get that. But we have plenty of time to discuss about why we think the episode is called Lethe. But I'm going to play an audio clip, and then me and Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break down this episode.
We can't let them do this to her. She has worked her whole life for this. She's excelled. You have to do something. This is not fair.
There's no logic in your request, Gwen. Fairness is quantifiable. The Vulcan Expeditionary Group has rated her abilities as insufficient and rendered their decision.
Their decision is wrong. She graduated at the top of her class. Her test scores are better than any Vulcan.
There are other metrics. Spiritual discipline, martial arts, logic.
Please, I want to go home.
Humiliation is a human emotion.
I'm sorry, Sarek.
All right, Clay, so you started off by saying that you don't like the show anymore. And I guess I'll the show's in kind of a weird spot online with Twitter. Like, I see a lot of Star Trek fans just trying to really enjoy and get something out of it, and a lot of just kind of giving up on the show at this point. I don't know if either is really the appropriate way to go about approaching the show at this point, but I don't know. It feels like it's a rudderless show at this point. And a lot of people are trying to, it reminds me a lot of Ghostbusters, the remake or reboot or whatever the hell, the old lady Ghostbusters, where the show is starting to no longer just be a movie or a show that I can enjoy. It like it reflects something about you, whether or not you enjoy it or you don't enjoy it. And I feel like the show is kind of hitting that point at this where we stand in the series. However, I will say that I thought this episode was interesting and very different from every other episode that's come before it. But why don't you tell us what you thought and why you came in so negative?
I don't know. I like metaphysical dream kung fu as much as the next person, but this shit was just, I don't. So the thing for me that was killing me is this entire episode was basically like exposition about shit that I don't really care about. And, I guess it was interesting for building up Burnham's character to a point, but it's like, you know, for everyone who said that they wished that they hadn't done the prologue the way that they did, like very straightforward, and they wished that they had revealed it later as like backstory, this episode is the exact reason why I'm glad they didn't do that. Because the entire episode was little bits of backstory followed by people talking about it for like 15 minutes. And I don't care about that. You know, I don't know. It's, and for another example of this week's question of where the fuck is the ship? The entire point of the episode is that, correct me if I'm wrong, that, Lorca is going to take the Discovery to save Sarek because they're the only ship that can get there fast enough or something like that, right? And so they light speed into where the Nebula is, which based on the previous scene where he's arguing with the Vulcan Starfleet guy, they're the only people who can get there / the only people in the area. That's fine. What's not fine is 10 minutes later when a fucking shuttlecraft shows up with the Admiral from where?
Right.
Where is she coming from? Why is the Discovery the only ship that can get there if the Admiral can fucking drive there in a fucking shuttlecraft?
Yeah.
What's going on? Like, you know, and it's, I think these things are making the show seem more mysterious than they should. Because when that happened for a second, I was like, oh, you know, this plus the shuttlecraft thing in the last one, it seemed like maybe he was set up or something. Like, oh, maybe she's setting him up. She's clearly not setting him up based on the rest of the episode. So, like, what? I don't understand. That these are just storytelling. They're not even details. They're just, like, storytelling basics of things that need to happen. The only reason they can't have that conversation over hologram is because they have to have sex halfway through the episode.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. It's stuff like this is just really, really taking the winds out. You know, I can let a lot of stuff go, but it's just when it's these, like, it's so clear that the beats of the story are just like note cards on a wall, and they're not. And I hate to be so critical, because I know how difficult, I mean, I don't know personally, but I understand how difficult it is to do something like this, to make a television show. It's not easy. But people seem to do it pretty well, a lot.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
I thought that I'd like to pat myself on the back, first of all, because I called they did have, the Admiral and Lorca did have a relationship, and I mentioned that in a previous episode. I thought I was getting hints of it, and it actually does appear to be the case. But, you know, I think that The show doesn't seem like it's ever going to get rid of these writing problems that are plaguing it, about like where people are and how quickly they can get things across and how characters can interact with each other when they need to and they can't when they don't and all this stuff. I thought the episode was weird because it felt like the first episode where it felt like Burnham had been on the ship for a very long time. And it's not like there was a big split in time between the two episodes, because Ash Tyler is still just getting his feet wet aboard the Discovery. So it took place right after that. But Burnham's relationship with Tilly and the sort of crew interactions where The scene where Stamets, Lorca, and Burnham all talk to each other, it feels very chummy. Obviously, something's wrong with Stamets at this point, and no one seems to be bringing it up or anything, but
I continue to enjoy Stamets. I like him. He's good.
Yeah, I think he's good. I continue to not enjoy Tilly, but at the same time, it felt like this episode to me felt different from all the previous ones. It felt like it had almost like 6 months had passed since the last episode and things have settled in a little bit more. It's written by Joe Manosky, who is an old Trek writer. He wrote for TNG and Deep Space Nine and Voyager and stuff. He wrote Darmok.
Really? Oh, yeah. That's depressing. The one thing I will say is this does feel this. Well, aside from the, well, I guess the sex scene isn't too bad, but between the admiral and her subordinate, it feels like a TNG episode. It feels like, because you know, flying into a nebula and then using like space Bluetooth to have a mind fight with your stepdad. You know, it feels like a shitty TNG thing.
Right.
I'm very disappointed to find out that it was the guy who wrote Darmok, because that's very much not a shitty TNG episode.
Yes, yeah. He also wrote Masks, which I don't think you've seen, but is a terrible episode. Minosky's always a very high concept. This doesn't feel like a Minosky episode to me, but it's interesting that he wrote it anyway.
What you're talking about, length of time having passed and stuff. The other thing that really bothered me is, I mean, this is just personal preference, I guess, but didn't it seem like the natural the natural arc of Burnham's story in the first season ends with her getting her post back on the ship?
Yes, I have a lot of points that I wrote down as to why are these things happening in this episode. Either they should have done it right from the start, or they should have waited until the season ends and that's when it all wraps up. Like, Burnham getting the post is one of them. The sort of Sarek resolution almost feels like it's an end of season type thing. We haven't even seen Sarek really in all that time. It felt like it was an episode that was very oddly choosing to place these events in this time, and it's weird to me that they waited, you know, five episodes basically instead of going the whole hog.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it continues this trend of just moving very fast through plot lines that seem like usually they should last longer. Like, we talked about how they dump the tardigrade very quickly, you know, which we were both happy they did. But I mean, it just seems like they're just barreling through their plot points.
Yeah, yeah. Same with the, you know, Lorca explaining his backstory, the tardigrade on this one. I thought even the editing struck me as too fast in this episode. Yeah. There were a couple cuts where I wasn't sure if we were like cutting to commercial and I was watching something else, or if something had gone wrong. I think they're trying to do it stylistically to keep you on your toes, but it feels to me like it's just a lot of plot that they're trying to get through to the point where, you know, this episode ends with the culmination of the Admiral goes off to meet with the Klingons and the Klingons kill everybody and then they take her hostage and stuff. And it all feels just really fast. It's really just barreling through all these plots and it doesn't want to sit on any of them for any extended amount of time. Except in this, I will say that the episode, you know, the episode is basically the Sarek storyline here with Burnham. And I think that they did an okay job with that. I don't like the Matrix style fighting. That feels ridiculous. Like the first time when he kicks her out of his mind, he just punches her and she like flies off into the distance. And
yeah, that was not great.
And then I will say that the other main storyline here is the Lorca and the Admiral storyline. And, you know, you were saying that you thought this felt like a TNG episode. I feel that the Lorca storyline is actually one of the better positives of this. And it actually felt like more of a modern TV show in what they're having Lorca do here at the end, where he says that he can't go rescue the Admiral because she's the one that wants to take Discovery, his command, from him.
Yep.
And he's in a place now at the very end where he is hesitant to sort of rescue her because it would mean something for himself, even though it's the right thing to do. So he's putting himself in sort of this like morally corrupted area.
Well, he's kind of got two things to deal with, doesn't he? He's got that. You can look at it from the angle of he's not going to get her specifically because it could be negative for him personally, but it's all you could also say that he's not going to get her because it's not because she was so critical of him not acting, not going by the book. Going to get her would be something going against it. So like it's I guess you could make the argument that he's doing it for personal reasons or because he's like, she's right, I need to start acting like a captain and acting like someone who's not insane, and that
right.
means following chain of command and following the rule book and all that kind of stuff, which he could also be doing passive aggressively. But
well, I felt that the ending shot kind of got away with that because it shows that he's still armed.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
the time, like he's yeah. still the paranoid sort of. It's a tough storyline because we don't know Lorca enough to realize why she thinks that he's broken at this point. Like. I've mentioned before that I don't think Lorca doesn't come across to me as the way that the other characters in the show perceive him, where they always say that he's on the warpath and stuff like that. He seems relatively level-headed to me a lot of the time.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I almost wish, this is just another personal style thing, but I wish we would see less of him. I wish he was more of like if not Ahab in... action Ahab in like stature,
sure.
You know, like he was a little bit more of a. He seems like for a guy who's quote on the warpath, he seems to be pretty chummy with people.
Yes.
So yeah, it would be interesting to see a little less of him and have him be a little bit more aloof. But you know, he honestly, I mean, I find him more interesting than I do Burnham. So I see why they focus on him.
Yeah, I mean, he's also considered to be a great general. Where the only two stories we know about him was that in the Battle of the Binary Stars, his ship got blown up, and we haven't seen him.
He blew his ship up.
He blew his ship up, and we haven't really seen him. You know, we haven't focused any time on the war effort here. He's in charge of a science ship at this point that he's sort of commandeered right. to turn it into a war vessel. But everything we've heard about the war has come from characters saying, you know, in between episodes, these are the things that we did. And you can't really get a sense of where he stands in terms of his military prowess, which is supposed to be something that's defining the character, and we don't really see it.
Yeah. And I still think that a big issue with all of this is the Discovery has no mission that we know of. You know, like we've mentioned this a few times, but every single version of Star Trek, pretty much at the front, they tell you what the mission of the ship is. And in Voyager's case, it's like it's a higher concept idea, but they still give it to you right away. This one, it's just like the Discovery. I don't know what's going on this science ship. Like what are they only there to research the drive?
Right, and it seems like they've done that.
Yeah, are they there? Yeah, because it was an entire season plot that they had to squeeze into two episodes. Are they there to specifically be a warship now? Like there's no one of the hallmarks of Star Trek is basically all of the stories that you see are either a mission or an interruption of a mission. And this show has neither of those things. Like they have no mission.
Right.
And nothing that they are doing are interrupting any of the missions they're on. It's always just like, yeah, we can do that. Sure, no problem. We're not doing anything else.
Yeah, well, I thought this episode was the first one that kind of broke the mold there because the mission to rescue Sarek, you know, it's interesting because the Discovery isn't particularly involved in the rescue mission, which is shocking, seeing as that the ship can jump anywhere that it needs to go. So why doesn't the Discovery just jump over to where Sarek was?
Because Stamets says if they jump into the nebula, for some reason, the nebula will blow it up because of the spores.
Okay, that makes sense. They explain that. So that feels very Trekky to me, actually. So
yeah.
the weird thing about it is that it breaks up the cast. And it felt to me like this was the opportunity for the first sort of normal Star Trek-y mission episode to come across where they rescue Sarek. Mm-hmm. And instead, they split the cast into the Lorca storyline and then Burnham, Ash Tyler, and Cadet Tilly go off in the shuttlecraft. And Tilly and Ash Tyler are totally useless in this plotline because it's just up to Burnham making mental contact with Sarek to figure out where he is.
But she can't do it unless they're there to like literally hold her hands. I actually wasn't. But yeah. It seems like they were there. It's just there to be like, hey, you can do it.
And Ash Tyler just is like, come on, man. Come on. You can do it. He's a weird character. Like, if they don't have him turn into the Vok thing that everyone thinks is going to happen, what an odd character to have to just insert 5 episodes into the show's run and have him be this guy at this point. Like, he felt purposefully pointless in this episode in a lot of ways. Like, they don't want to draw too much attention to him. Mm. And I do think that if the Vok storyline is what's happening and that he is a spy, I hope they don't drag this out for the rest of the season, because I think everyone sees through it at that point if that's what's going on.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I would hope it's something has something to do with him having his mind wiped, because otherwise, I don't know. I hope that if they do, they could do it in where they tell you that it's Vok, but clearly he doesn't know that he's Vok, that kind of thing.
Right,
so it allows him to not just be doing shifty eyes in the background and everything.
Right, and at that point, is he Vok anymore? You know, like, right. You could have that whole discussion.
Yeah, it was an interesting discussion to have, very Star Trek discussion to have. Shit, what the hell was I going to say? I'll talk about something else. It'll come back to me.
Well, we get our first sense of something I thought was kind of interesting in a like a Star Trek legacy type way.
I remembered it. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
My biggest issue with the Tyler as Vok thing is they addressed it. They addressed my issue with it early in this episode, where after they go through the danger room sequence, which is, again, it's way better than anything that's ever been in any Star Trek show ever. But whatever. It's much better visually than Picard and Data or Riker standing in a black room shooting into the sky. When he says something, Lorca says something to the effect of like, I wouldn't just let anybody on this ship or something, like, implying that he looked up Tyler's background and vetted him as a Starfleet officer.
Yeah.
But then later in the episode, the Admiral's like, you just let some guy you met onto your ship. We don't know anything about this guy. And I was like, what? I mean, unless I misheard it, didn't the Admiral, like, give him shit for letting Tyler onto the ship?
Yes. I think it happened there is that the Admiral, I'm under the impression that Ash Tyler was a real person at some point. And like,
I was thinking that has to be what it was.
Yeah. And Lorca looked up his service record or whatever. And he is like, oh, I double-checked that guy, and it's this guy. And I think the Admiral is supposed to be operating under the assumption that she doesn't know that. But the show itself is not clearly stating whether or not Ash Tyler was a person who served on such and such a ship at the Battle of the Binary Stars. You know, if they do that, it would give the audience a firmer grasp of this was an actual guy. But it seems, if they don't do it, it more implies the fact that he's a spy. If Lorca clearly can't figure out who this person is, then it seems odd to me that Lorca is buying so much into the fact that he gives this guy a job on a ship. But although it seems like Lorca gives everybody a job on a ship, he's just that kind of a guy. Yeah, I don't know. That's my understanding anyway. Did you have something different going on, or did you think it was a bigger problem?
No, it's just, you know, it's again, it's the problem with the show is that they're so lax with details like this. I can't tell if it's just bad writing or if they're actually have a plan in mind. Like, it could be that Ash Tyler is an actual person or was an actual person who, assuming Vok is this person, who Vok is now impersonating. Or, I don't know, maybe is there like a larger conspiracy involved where there's like multiple moles inside Starfleet that like planted this backstory? I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
Right.
It could go either way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking that if Ash Tyler was a real person, they somehow took his memories and implanted them into Vok. Vok is him. Like, they've built this person who, you know, for some reason is going to be able to break the programming mold at some point and report back. We haven't seen any signs of that yet. He seems very amiable to all of his current cast members and everything like that. So we'll see if that ends up anywhere.
Yeah, I guess my biggest issue with the Vok thing is just like I was saying, I don't know if there's a way that they can pay this off where I'm going to be satisfied and be like, oh, that was really interesting.
Sure.
It just feels like it's going to be like a Spock's brain situation, and I'm not going to be happy about it.
As long as it's not an alternative factor or something. I mean, I thought that I didn't. I don't know. I guess I want to talk about the something that felt very Trekkie to me, and I thought was an interesting expansion of the universe was the Sarek storyline here that starts with, as always, Sarek is one of the stronger characters, I think, because he's got a lot of past history going on, and the writers can actually do something with him. He is attacked by Vulcan nationalists, which seems to be a big theme of the show so far. Who are willing to embrace violence in the fact that they don't want humans to be involved. Like, they see the Federation as a mistake, and they think Vulcan should be off on its own doing its own thing, which is very similar to what the Klingons were saying at the start of the season. So that seems to be a big theme of the series so far. It kind of mirrors the politics of today, which is like globalists versus nationalists on some level. And I guess that they're saying that there's a nationalist strand running through Vulcans, even though we know that it ends up being much more of a homogenous Federation type thing going forward.
I actually, you know, I found that concept interesting because it kind of clicked that high concept button in my brain when I was thinking, like, that's okay, so yeah, there's an entire race of people who are dedicated to logic, but there are some who are dedicated to logic to the extreme point that the logical step for their mind to go through is we need to be basically, you know, pure, I guess, master race or whatever. So the logical step is to remove this other person from there, and in order to do that, we must, you know, kill her or something. Like, I can see the twisted understanding of logic leading someone down that path, and that's actually a pretty interesting idea.
Yeah.
I hesitate only because it does seem so similar to what they're doing with the Klingons. I mean, I guess you could make the argument that if you look at the world right now, there seems to be strands of nationalism running through every country. So it makes perfect sense that it would run through all of the different types of people on Star Trek as well.
Yeah.
And it does also answer it does also kind of deal with something that I think Star Trek doesn't really get into that much unless it's forced into, which is much like in Star Wars, every planet seems to have one ecosystem. In Star Trek, every species seems to have one style of person.
Yeah,
which, and so, like, I mean, you've only ever seen the classic Vulcan, which is actually kind of amazing, given that the show's been around for 50-something years, that they've only, with the exception of a couple one-offs, like Spock's brother.
Cyborg,
Yeah, and I'm sure a couple other things along the way. You've never really seen, like, a different kind of Vulcan. Like, it's a big planet. I'm sure there's a lot of different kinds of Vulcans out there.
Well, I guess you could argue that the Romulans are, you know, the Romulans are an offshoot of Vulcans. So I guess that's kind of a, you know, technically a way to look at two different Vulcan races.
True. That's a good point. But I guess the issue there, for me anyway, the issue there is that they're creating a separate race who are all the same
right?
on their own planet. So it's like, yeah, they're kind of like it's the way that, you know, you are you know what I mean. It's a little bit of a cheat. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Yeah. They're the same, only in this sort of backstory-ish way, when they are separate races outside of that in every other way. I think that the Vulcan national, like I like this Vulcan nationalist storyline. The problem is that I don't know what the theme of the series is so far. Like the Discovery, we don't know what the Discovery's mission is. I don't know if they had been hammering this nationalist point a little bit harder or something, like making a consistent theme throughout all these episodes, I would have been more on board with it. I'd be like, oh, the show is interested in examining like how the different subsets of each culture gave way to this future Trek series where all the cultures get along with each other. And like, how did all the cultures of Vulcans, Klingons, and Federation all work through these difficult aspects of their own sort of growing up period to get to this point later on? They don't really seem very interested in dealing with that, other than just sort of throwing it out there and saying, this is what you have to do, and this is what's going on with these planets and stuff. Mm. And I think that it's just the series to me just doesn't know what it's about at this point. Like, is this a political thriller? Is this a sort of like a Star Trek standard adventure thing? Is it a look at the modernization, like modern politics in a Star Trek world? I don't really get a sense of any of those coming true, and I don't feel like any of them are the main storyline.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's I wonder if it's due to the serialization of it. And I'm not saying that in that serialization is a bad thing, but it seems like they are fighting between serializing the story and doing episode to episode, like adventure type stuff. Like, we can get into what the next episode seems to be towards the end if you want, but that seems like a next week on Star Trek, we're caught in a time loop and every 30 seconds the ship blows up or whatever.
Yes, it felt very cause and effect-y. That's what they seemed to be getting at, yeah.
And doing those things while also moving the story forward can be very tricky. Even more tricky if you don't seem to know what you're moving your story towards. But, you know, I hesitate to say that they don't know that, because, I mean, if Vok is actually this character, Ash Tyler, clearly that's something that they've had in the works for a while. Like, they knew they were going to do that.
Right.
So they have, I'm sure that they have the arc of the season broken out. And if that's the case, it's even a little more confusing, because, yeah, I'm not really sure what the show is about either at this point.
Well, I mean, would you be happy with the Vok as a spy as the main storyline for the season? Like, I feel like if they do something that small, it feels like a very wasted opportunity here of why you would bring back Star Trek in a sort of modern context and try to make a new show out of it. Where I feel that let me ask you, which would you rather do? If the show could be more of a serialized thing and hit this sort of serialized arcs that are going across all the episodes and everything like that, or if it was more standalone-y, which one would you prefer that the show did at this point?
I would prefer it to be more serialized. I think I like the way that they're attempting to do it. I like the idea of doing serialized story, but you also have like standalone stuff that you're doing within each episode. I just think it's difficult to do when it's not clear what you're working towards in the larger sense. And I agree with what you were saying. The Vok spy thing isn't a big enough story to be the entire story for the season. It's way more interesting to do something like you were saying about the different worlds bickering and dealing with how to come together to form this federation that we know and love later on. Is that what they're doing? Like, is it not clear that's what, are they just stumbling with it, do you think?
I'd have to think that's what they're doing. I sort of wonder, too, how long they think the series is going to go. Like, are they thinking that Discovery can't wrap that story up in its first season, right? The sort of bickering of the different planets and, like, trying to come to a decision about something. Mm-hmm. Are they thinking that if the show goes more than one season, that's not something we can resolve in this first year? So we're only going to give little tidbits of information out about it? Mm-hmm. If so, they've settled on a much less satisfying story to me. Like, I would have thought, I thought the Klingon War was going to be the main storyline, but we don't really do anything with the Klingon War. We have these weird one-off scenes where we see the Klingons and they have a spy, but we haven't seen anything about the fighting. Have you seen Battlestar Galactica?
I have not.
Okay, well, the ending of this feels very much like the first scene of Battlestar Galactica in a lot of ways. And I don't know. It's just the Klingon war should be taking the forefront of what's going on. And I don't feel like it is. It's way in the background against everything. And I don't feel that the characters are playing off of it very well. I don't feel like we're really examining things. I do think that this episode dealt with my previous complaint about the Burnham not really... the Vulcan aspect of Burnham not being explored. And I feel like this kind of explored it. Although I still don't really understand Burnham's major problem with like her personality traits. Like I don't, she seems to be totally human at this point. There is no Vulcanness to her really.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. I watched that speech she gives to Ash at the end there twice. And I came away the second time thinking like, does this work if she's not actually Vulcan? Like that speech works with Spock because inherently he is actually fighting those two things literally because he is of two different worlds. Burnham isn't. And I mean, I guess there's a argument to be made against like, or about, you know, the nature versus nurture kind of thing where by nature she's not a... I mean, they actually even use that phrase in the episode, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Sarek says it.
Yeah, and you know, she's not by nature a Vulcan, but she's grown up under the Vulcan way. So, you know, she's going to end up like Kevin Costner in Dances with Wolves at the end where he's going to just be part of the tribe, basically.
Right, yeah.
and, like, does that make her... any less of a Vulcan, really? I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to compare her to like Worf, who has essentially the same story but in reverse, and isn't like a Klingon who likes wearing cable knit sweaters and like just loves being on Earth. You know, he's a Klingon who's raised by humans but loves being a Klingon.
Right. Like yeah.
But I guess that's not the story they wanted to tell with him, which is fine. But it's an interesting thing where I appreciate what they're doing, but I don't know if it works as well as it would if she was actually part Vulcan. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Because I mean, there is no conflict there. Her human side is always going to win out. And the logic aspect, which makes Spock have a lot of sense, because Spock is trying to be the Vulcan in that case, and the human side is what kind of holds him back every once in a while. That's the conflict of that character.
Yeah.
Burnham, I don't even think, Burnham doesn't even really seem to want to be a full Vulcan. She did when she was younger, I guess. She wanted to get into this school or something, but she got into Starfleet instead. And I like that they kind of played it off as her and Spock are two opposites, where Spock was supposed to go into the Vulcan school and he said, just sort of turned his back on Sarek and went into Starfleet instead. And Burnham is the opposite of that case, but Burnham is not good enough to get into the Vulcan school. And, you know, I understand the tragedy of Sarek's choice didn't mean anything here to him at the end, but that really feels like a stupid thing that he feels bad about in a lot of ways. Like who really cares? And I guess we're supposed to build into the, you know, knowing about Sarek's thing later with Spock will be, because in 10 years he's going to deal with that whole storyline, but it doesn't feel, his sort of like sense of betrayal and like holding this in and feeling emotional about it the whole time didn't really feel, you know, all that relevant to me. It felt like something he could have told her about, and he's just kind of being a dick. But basically their relationship is built on being dicks to each other.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like what his relationship with Spock kind of was too, right?
Yes, except there they have kind of a common bond between, like, they relate on the Vulcan level of it, and I don't feel like Burnham really does that.
Yeah, you know, the tough thing I think with Burnham is the reason that same dichotomy works with Spock is because, you know, you set up your character to have certain traits, and then you surprise the audience by having them work against those traits, right? So Spock is super hyperlogical until the times that he isn't, and that's where you build your character, basically. That's where the same thing with Data. Data is super logical and a robot, and then sometime he goes yes, and
right,
people cringe when that happens.
lock and load.
Lock and load. And you know, and that's where the same thing with Worf. Worf is a Klingon until he acts not like a Klingon, and that's where, you know, some of the characterization comes from. Burnham doesn't have that clear of a character definition, so it's tough to deal with the internal struggle, because it's her character isn't just very clear as to what side is winning.
Right, yeah.
You know,
why does she care about her human side winning out? Like, she's obviously been granted great analytical skills by growing up with the Vulcans, right? So yeah. That seems to be a positive. But she also hasn't lost her humanity. Like, she grew up human, so why would she want to abandon her humanity? Just because she's been raised by Sarek long enough that she wants to impress him, I guess. But that doesn't... The Vulcan side should win out there and just say, you know, you're not really my... The logic of it is, you're not really my race, so I'm going to be happy being what I am. Mm-hmm. And for the time being, with the skills that you've given me from your, you know, Vulcan analytical side. But I don't get that sense from her.
Yeah, and you know, it seems like I thought the way it was going to go with her in general was going to be like, she acts like a human until... I thought it was going to be like the reverse of Spock, where she acts like a human until, due to circumstances, she switches into Vulcan mode. And that's never really been the case.
No.
Because it's an interesting trait to have, where it's like, if you are in a situation where your emotions can get the better of you, you can use that as a crutch. You know, if you are in an emotional situation involving another character, you can switch to Vulcan mode and then be like, hey man, that's just not how I am. I'm very logical. You know, as a way right. to, which is interesting. That's an interesting character interaction.
And it would also give her the personality that would be difficult to deal with, like a prickly personality, because she would have that sort of like, almost like an autistic thing where she would not be able to relate to these crew members that are new and that she needs to relate to. But instead, that is sort of watered down because no one on the crew really gets along on a fundamental level.
But at the same time, everybody seems to be cool with each other. It's weird.
Yes. Yeah, so this episode, they do seem to be cool with each other. And that's the whole timing issue of how much time has passed in between these two episodes, because everyone seems to be on a different level, even though it seems like not much time has passed at all.
Yeah, yeah. And, her interaction with Sarek in this episode, I don't know. It's like, her coming to terms with humanity at the end doesn't feel like it's, I don't know, maybe I'm being too hard on it, but it didn't feel like that was the struggle for her in the episode. It was, right. It seemed more like it was the struggle was, I don't know, maybe I guess it was, because I guess it was, she's dealing with the fact that she worked so hard to be Vulcan and it wasn't good enough. And
I thought it was more a struggle between trying to please Sarek and...
Yeah, I guess it wasn't about being Vulcan. It was about just pleasing Sarek, right?
Pleasing Sarek, yeah, and being herself, I guess. Although it's tough. I don't think it's actually all that well defined. It feels like it is sort of getting at those points, but I don't really think that the episode is focusing on any of them to any great extent. Like it feels more like it was an excuse to flesh out the backstory here of how Sarek and her know each other and how Spock kind of fits in to everything on mm-hmm, some level. Mm-hmm. Like it felt like they were just trying to sort of nail down, this is how this is going to happen. And in a weird way, the episode actually felt like it kind of went out of its way a lot of the times to make sure that people knew that we're in the same prime universe as Kirk's Enterprise.
Yeah.
They mentioned it a couple times in the episode. I just thought it was unusual that they would do it so many times.
Yeah, I was hoping that in those flashbacks or mind jumps or whatever, they were just going to take a detour over to where Cybok was just like smoking dope and listening to the Doobie Brothers in his awesome Vulcan van.
So before, well, I guess we'll just wrap this up with what's interesting to me is that they are not seemingly going to do anything to explain why Spock has never mentioned his adopted sister.
Eh, I don't care. I don't
you
think
don't
they
care.
Need to. No.
Okay.
I mean, is that really a story that you need to know?
No,
if they spend a whole episode explaining that. Are you really going to feel satisfied and be like, oh, I'm glad that they wasted time telling me why Spock never brings up his half-sister?
No, I don't. I mean, and Cybok kind of fits into it, too, because he never mentioned Cybok, who's his half-brother, the entire time. So I guess Spock just doesn't really bring up his family.
Ricky Kirk. What's his? Kirk's got a brother, too, right?
Or does.
Is his brother dead?
Yeah, his brother dies in season one of the first season, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they do that shit all the time. It doesn't really bother me.
Yeah, I guess it was just more of a... To me, it felt like it was the thing that they would obviously try to write out. And that's kind of where my multiple universes theory was kind of building off of that. Of like, we end up in a universe where that doesn't actually happen. But I guess that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. So all the theories that I thought were going to be happening don't seem to be happening anymore. Yeah.
I don't know. It's still... See, that's the thing. I don't know if these questions that we have about what could or couldn't be happening aren't due to the fact that the show is compelling. They're due to the fact that we have no idea what's happening.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to... I think we've wrapped up this discussion. We're going to play an audio clip, and then me and Clay are going to come back and we're going to give our final thoughts about Lethe.
I'm feeling a lot of emotions right now. Commander Webb to security. I'm not sure pride is one of them. But I do want to thank you, sir. You didn't have to mount this rescue mission for Sarek.
I didn't do it for him. I need a team around me that's going to help me carry the day. And that includes you. So I'd like to make it official. There's a post waiting for you on the bridge. Science specialist. Don't even think about saying no.
I accept.
Good.
All right, Clay. So for me, not much has changed. I thought this was actually a fairly decent episode that had problems with it. I really just like the fact that they went into the Vulcan aspect. They fleshed out the Lorca backstory a little bit, and they gave him stakes going forward, I think, which Lorca didn't really have. Yeah. And I'm glad about that. Like, it seems like they're setting the table for things. I didn't really care for the... I didn't care for the mental kung fu. I thought that was horrible. I didn't care for the, you know, the leaps of logic that the show continues to do about like where Discovery is and how the Admiral can get there. And I thought it was fine. It's just not the episode didn't grab me or anything. It felt like it was actually trying to do something, and I don't know if it actually succeeded the entire way of getting there.
Yeah, I didn't hate it as much as it sounded like I did but it does frustrate me because I actually thought that the final scene with all of the storylines was good. I liked where we ended up with Lorca. I liked the final scene with Burnham and Sarek. I liked the scene where the Klingon does the Captain Phillips thing and says, I was hoping he was going to say, I am the captain now, but he didn't. but it frustrates me. You know, I even kind of liked that scene at the end with her and Tyler, but it frustrates me because all of those things feel like they wrote those first and then worked backwards from them.
Yes, yeah.
They don't feel earned. Like the Lorca storyline probably feels the most like it's not a cheat I shouldn't say that, but it feels like it's the most that they earn. But even there, it's like the logic of how they started off is kind of iffy.
I mean, the problem with the Lorca thing to me is why did it take four episodes to give him this problem? I feel like this is something that you should have started the character off with. And, you know, it's not like go ahead.
I was just going to say, at the very least, we should have been spending the previous episodes showing him acting the way that he's being criticized for acting.
Right.
Like if this storyline took place in episode number 3, where we meet him for the first time, nothing changes. Like
yes, exactly.
It's not like we appreciate it more because we've seen the way he's acting. You know, if anything, it almost feels like it doesn't make sense because the stuff he's been doing hasn't really been that crazy.
No, and he's been very successful at it. He's been doing like raids, and you know, he's
well. He even brings that up, and the Admiral's like, "Well, don't talk to me about your record." And it's like, "Well, then what are we talking about here?"
Right. What you hired me or whatever to do this job, and I'm doing it. Yeah. So, I feel that it's a storyline that Lorca should have had from his first appearance, and it feels a little bit like they've flipped it to this point. Like, to get to this point is kind of a character reversal that I don't really agree with for him.
Yeah.
And they did it through a means of never showing you any of the stuff that she's talking about, even to the point of, in this episode, he doesn't seem that outrageous. He sent Burnham.
Oh, I thought you were talking about, like, full penetration. They didn't.
Even to the point of, the Admiral's upset with him for sending Burnham, right? Burnham is the only person who could have found Sarek in this episode. Like, the logic of sending her makes a lot of sense in this, even though if he doesn't know it at the point. It feels like something he could have fired back at him and, like, you know, the reason we send Burnham is because of blah, blah, blah. He doesn't do it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say about that storyline. I mean, you know, it's too bad because, like you said, adding actual stakes to his character are something that are, you know, that should have been there, and I'm glad that it's there now.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, bummed that it took so long. And, you know, I'm in a tough place with this show because it's not really grabbing me. And if I'm way off base, please, you guys, let me know what I'm missing. And I, you know, feel free to yell at me in the comments or something. But I don't know. It's just not. It's not doing it for me.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I agree. You know, the ending of this episode didn't really have me looking forward to the next one. We didn't even really touch on the Mirror Stamets universe. Like, you know, I feel like that's the. I wanted to see more of that, and we didn't really get any of it. It's just odd, and you know, you can say.
I'm sure. Oh, go ahead.
Well, yeah, you can say that you have to wait till you get to the end of the season and stuff like that, and I'd be fine with that if, on a per episode by episode basis, the show was better than it actually is. And it's frustrating if the episodes are not good that I don't get immediately, you know, get an immediate sort of not closure, but a continuation of the storylines from previous episodes.
Yeah, I think what's frustrating about that is, like, I think it's indicative of how rudderless the show kind of is, because when you get something like that at the end of the episode, your reaction is, oh, okay, here we go, now we're getting somewhere, and then it's like, nope, not yet. I mean, I'm sure it'll come back in, like, two or three episodes, because, I mean, Harry Mudd seems to be coming back next episode for some reason.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
You know, yeah. I'm sure it'll come back, and they'll spend an episode on it, and then, you know, that'll be it. But it's a bummer, because, I don't know, they've done this a few times, where they've given you bits at the end of an episode that seem like it's going to be a larger plot thread, and then it's just like, no, not really. I mean, it's this, but we're done with that now.
Right. So it's not a larger plot. It's just kind of, it's the next action to get you to the next plot beat. Like, it's a small thing that happens on the way, and it's not like it's like, oh, this is what the season and the series are going to be about.
Yeah. I will say, I did notice, I had never noticed that the command pips are actually on the star, which is cool. That's a good...
Oh, and
their
little
problem.
Yeah, their little communicator badge or whatever it is. They don't have communicator badges, but the little pen. Yep.
I gotta admit, I'm talking about something positive. I really like those badges. I think those are cool.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's the only positive thing I have to say.
I mean, I like all the design choices, kind of. I like the way the faces look. I like the communicator style. I like the way the ship looks is fine and stuff like that. I don't know. It's just everything else underneath the aesthetics of it aren't really doing it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said at the beginning, I've come to terms with the technology being, but is it not a big deal that they basically have a holodeck on this ship?
Feels like a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's just another thing that says, why didn't they set this in the future?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at that point, they couldn't say, someday you'll serve with Captain Kirk on
That's
the Enterprise and stuff like that and get everybody very excited. Yeah, I don't, you know, I guess we can just wrap
it up. They're gonna put Spock in this show, aren't they?
I feel like it's kind of leading towards that. So, Zachary Quinto will appear. I guess I would just want to wrap it up with a sort of like how do you feel about the show being the state that it's in now on, like, a personal level? As someone who's not particularly invested into Star Trek and things like that, like, Do you feel anything about shows when they go wrong, or like, do you have any kind of feelings about like the expectations of a series that comes out and it doesn't meet your expectations?
Well, you know, it's always disappointing if it doesn't meet your expectations. And I mean, there are people who are really liking the show, and that's totally fine. You know, I'm not gonna give you shit because you like it or something just because I don't. And that's not even fair to say. It's not that I don't like it. It's just that it is kind of just. It just feels like a bit of a missed opportunity. And I feel like such an asshole saying this stuff because I know how hard it is to do this stuff, but. As purely as a viewer, it's just a bummer that it's not coming together cleaner.
Yeah. I thought that I see a lot of, you know, the harder Trek fandom is kind of funny about it because it's like, you know, I feel like I'm no longer of an age where a bad step in the series means anything to me. Like I've been screwed by other series at this point that it's like, you know what, who cares? Like worst case scenario, I would not consider this to be a Star Trek series. You know, like when it ends, I'd be like, yeah, that was a weird little side quest that we went on. It didn't really amount to anything, but I don't know. It's not, you know, Star Trek is kind of complete to me in some sense. And this was more an opportunity to sort of reboot something and turn it into something novel, and I'm mostly upset by the fact of how unnovel the show is. Like, it's not,
yeah,
they didn't try to do anything new with the series. They tried to basically modernize it and tried to make it told in a sort of a story of modern times, kind of. It's not like they took Star Trek and really tried to do something unique with it or anything. It's surprising how uninspired it is in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I agree. I liked how they changed it up at the beginning, for the first two episodes. But I feel like as of yet, they haven't really followed through on that. That was just seemingly at this point, it just seems like it was a hook to get you into it, and then same old, and it's just, you know, everything has been. The sunglasses are a little bit bigger, and the everything's been rastified by 25% to quote The Simpsons.
So, go ahead.
I don't think I really had much else. You know, Star Trek. I've always been a Star Trek fan, but it's never been the thing that I've been super emotionally invested in. But even so, I think I talked about this on our Star Wars podcast, or maybe I haven't, but I've gotten to a point with Star Wars where it's, you know, I was so involved and invested in, you know, continuity and whether or not those movies are good or bad for so long. And when Rogue One came out, I realized I don't care anymore. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just like that stuff just doesn't bother me that much anymore. Like I can go to these movies and be like, you know what, this isn't really, I enjoyed it, it was fine, it's not gonna ruin my life because the CGI on Governor Tarkin didn't really look great or something, you know.
Right, yeah,
it's like, you know, and it's a weird zen kind of feeling when you can kind of remove yourself and be like, you know what, I can enjoy this without it ruining my life. It's great.
The older I get, the less I care about the continuity, really. Like, I care about continuity. There's two ways to look at continuity. I don't really care about, there's like Trek Twitter feeds and stuff that like somehow have all this information about previous series at their fingertips. And like whenever something happens in Discovery, they tweet like, oh, this is a callback to such and such a thing in this show.
Yeah.
And well, that's interesting. I care very little about that continuity in terms of the show. The reason continuity affects me is because at a certain point, if you're not paying attention to continuity of something, the writing is bad.
Yes.
Like, as long as the writing is fine, that's all I really care about. And I don't care about... This show seems too happy to pat itself on the back by sneaking in all these little references to previous Star Trek shows. And I don't care about that. Like, just make the show good, and then everything will come from that. And I don't care if, you know, if this Klingon augmentation thing makes no sense in the context of the rest of the series, I don't really give a fuck, whatever, who cares, just tell me a good story about it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Continuity and fan, I don't want to say fan service, but kind of fan service stuff seems to be so important to, if not the people watching stuff, the people who are making it, it seems to be like that seems to be the most important thing that they feel like they have to hit now over actually just telling a good story. And so, like, I don't understand. So, like, I look at the X-Men movie series, right? Which, if you think about those movies in continuity wise, your brain is going to explode. And it's something I hear people say all the time. It's like, oh, well, you know, the continuity of these movies is just terrible and makes no sense. Who cares?
Well, I think they started to embrace that later on in the movie's run, right?
Yeah.
Where each movie becomes its own thing. And it's just like, you know, we can't keep up with the continuity. We'll make a movie like Logan, which is about, you know, sort of getting older, basically.
You know, And that interests me way more than whether or not what's happening in Days of Futures Past lines up exactly with what happens in X-Men 3. Or, you know what I mean? You know, now this movie's been erased because, you know, I don't care. There are some places where that stuff does matter. Like when you've got something that is so your Marvel movies there that are so heavily based on each other, where continuity does matter. That's a bit of a different story, but I'm more interested in telling good stories. Like the thing that makes these properties last this long is that they are good base concepts to tell good stories with. And when you're not doing that, and it just turns into winks and nods to the audience, it's like, what the fuck are we even doing here?
Right. Yeah.
You know, like there's a new Halloween movie coming out next year, and people are up in arms about the fact that it's like a sequel to the original and negates all the other movies that are taking place. I don't give a shit. Who if they can right. give me a good if they give me a good Halloween movie, I don't care what they do in it, as long as it stays true to the concept and tells a good story.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's
my old man rant for the week, I guess.
No, I think it makes sense, and I think that it's something that the show is suffering from, where the show seems to be more interested in patting itself on the back about these references to previous stuff and calling in relationships that we know should exist, and now this is going to how the show is going to explain how they exist. I don't know. It's not really doing it for me at this point. We'll see. There's time for things to change, but it needs to settle on some stories, and it needs to go quickly in that direction. But anyway, we're going to wrap this up. Guys, thank you very much for listening. You can go to all the social media, which is linked in the video description and in the podcast blurb. Only thing I'll mention is Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. A couple dollars a month, the price of a cup of coffee a month, you get extra podcasts. We just did It Follows, the horror movie. We're going to be doing Halloween for Halloween, all that kind of stuff. You can get extra podcasts at The Penske File on Patreon, and it's much appreciated.
I will say, just to tag on to that continuity argument or discussion, there are instances where that stuff is very satisfying. Like I don't begrudge people who enjoy that stuff, but it's just not always for me. When it's done well, when it's very satisfying continuity connection, then it's great. Like when you're watching Doctor Who and like all of the other Doctors show up and it's very satisfying, that's great.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the... If you have a solid story and you can somehow add a perfect continuity thing into it, that's like the best case scenario.
Oh,
right? So it's not that you should just throw away continuity, but you should use it to augment the main thing that's
exactly.
going on.
Exactly.
And then everyone will be very appreciative of your efforts in that case.
Yes, yes.
The patrons, the $10 patrons on Patreon, guys, get a shout out. Thank you very much for supporting the show, guys. It's Tariq Latif, Joint Mango, Ben Douglas, Kyle Barrett, Vincent Adultman, Stephen Cobb, Tex Owlbear, Matthew Ross, and Mike Burnett. Guys, thank you very much. You make the show possible. And we'll be back next week with the episode of Discovery that's after this. And we only have a couple more before the two-month-long break, Clay. So give me your prediction, or what's the one thing you would do to sort of rectify and right the ship at this point, going into the home stretch for the half a season? It doesn't have to be like specific. Just like, what's one thing that you would try to do?
I would like at the end of this half of season to know where we're going for the next half of the season. Just in it, like, you know, just in a general sense where it's like, okay, this is clearly the story that we're going to be telling across the rest of the season, instead of just sort of, you know, it's like it feels to me right now that everybody agreed that the selling point that everybody agreed on in the writer's room was like, it was going to be, okay, they wrote on the board, Star Trek Discovery season one, big story, Klingon War. And then everyone's like, yeah, that's great. Oh, man, that's a really great idea. And then they just forgot what to do inside, like under that.
Yeah.
And they just figured like that would write itself. And clearly that has not happened. So it would be nice to get a firmer thesis about what the story is for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. It's just, if we're going to end with the half a season, have there be some incident that makes it obviously clear that this is what's going on from here on out. I think that's it. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Clay, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And we will be back next week. There will be a Deep Space Nine episode out this Thursday. All the usual stuff. And then I'm kicking around some new idea. Maybe that'll come out eventually at some point soon. But I have to think about it. I can't just pull a Star Trek Discovery and think that it'll all come together in the end. I guess I actually have to do some work on my own. But guys, thank you very much for listening. I'll see you next time.